Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable to you always, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. When I was in college, my parents lived in a very small town in North Texas. I was not from there. And it was a place unlike anywhere I had ever been before, and the cast of characters in that town were noteworthy enough that someone could have actually written a book about them. Little did I know, but a few years later, around the year 2000, the author and playwright Del Shores, who also grew up in North Texas, wrote a play, and later a movie, about people just like the ones in that town. And if you haven't seen it, the movie is called Sordid Lives. Now, I won't say much about the plot, but the movie is all about the circumstances surrounding the accidental death and the quite scandalous death of Miss Peggy Ingram, the family's matriarch. In one scene, you have the very much trying to quit chain smoker sister named Sissy at the church, paying her respects to her poor deceased older sister, Peggy. Next to the viewing, there is this huge and tacky Texas-sized floral bouquet. And so Sissy, who is in the middle of the highway chain-smoking in the church, goes over to that bouquet and she pulls out the card. And she stares at it, but she can't see it, so she puts on her reading glasses. And then she reads it out loud. Jesus called. Peggy answered. Oh. And she puts the card away, takes a puff of smoke, and goes away. Jesus called. Peggy answered. Is this how being called works? It means you die? Nothing more? Sad to say, but I think a lot of Christianity thinks that the whole nature of being called is something akin to that ridiculousness in Sordid Lives. There is a small part, though, I do agree with, though, and that is there's always a notion in our life that we have this deep call in our spirit throughout our lives. We all have it. We feel it. It's not part of death, but it's actually rather part of living. We feel called in some way or another. But called to what? Sometimes we don't know. Abraham this morning is being called away from his homeland and going where? He doesn't even know. But he's sensing a great tug on his heart, and he sensed this great call from God, and he's feeling compelled to, okay, give it a try, and to answer, and to say yes to this great invitation. Likewise, the gospel has us finding Nicodemus, a member of the Pharisees, the religious establishment, being called to find Jesus under the darkness of night because he's drawn to him. Oh, he's definitely heard about Jesus. He's seen what he's done for other people, and he's very interested in knowing more. But he doesn't want his other friends to know he's out seeking counsel from this itinerant, rather controversial rabbi. So he goes to Jesus at night. In this exchange with Jesus, we see something very cultural going on. We see this very classic bantering that's common among two rabbis, this back and forth Q&A. It's nothing less than two people having a very in-depth theological discussion. And so Jesus tells Nicodemus that if he wants real transformation from God, his real transformation of God has to be brought on by being born again. What? Impossible, Nicodemus says. But Jesus says, what you're not getting is what's required is a spiritual birth, a birth of a new imagination, of seeing God and seeing your life differently. We have a little clue about this in our reading. Now, it names Nicodemus as a Pharisee. And so remember how Pharisees believed that their true interaction with God would only take place if the people of God would follow the Torah, the law, exactly, perfectly, all the time, in following the exact commandments of God's law, and then the Spirit of God would reside with the people and God's favor would be upon them. But Jesus breaks this all open, and he's addressing the right now with Nicodemus. He's saying the Spirit of God is available and God's favor is cast upon all people by answering the call of God right now. It's not about following rules, but rather it's about allowing your heart and your whole being, your heart, your mind, your body, your spirit, to engage with God and allow God to take you to places where you never imagined you could go, from breaking free from those old rules or old expectations and instead imagining for once, imagining how God is changing you and taking you into new territory with completely new possibilities. But we know this is hard. You and I are often Nicodemus in this story. We like how we do things. Some might say we like the world exactly as it is. We're very comfortable. Thank you very much. I am not interested. We have a habit of hanging on to the status quo at all costs, whether the status quo is good for us or whether the status quo is bad for us. Kind of do. So it's no wonder then why so many people we know are often unhappy or isolated or resolved to live in a world that none of us like very much. Sometimes some of us have been very hurt deeply by our church experiences that we've had before. Do we sometimes, when we start thinking about this, regress and feel bound by the rules of a church from another era? Are we feeling bound by some kind of self-imposed rules that we think we have to conform to because we haven't allowed ourselves to imagine what life could actually be like if we allowed God in to change us, to set us free from those bonds of our old lives, and to give us a perspective on how to love the world and how to love ourselves and how to love everybody? That we might actually feel like we've been truly been born again because we have a new lease on life. We struggle with this idea of being called into this. Many Christians have. We're afraid of being changed. And so we stay stagnant. And we end up doing the same routine. And we end up kind of digging an even bigger rut for ourselves where we don't want to change. We don't want to move. We just want to be in the middle of that rut. The popular fundamentalist-leaning American version of Christianity wants to envision and wants to propagate and emphasize this born-again aspect, something that implies that if you believe the right things and if you say the right things to the right people at the right time, you will somehow have the grace of God fall upon you. In some ways, that's the same mindset that Nicodemus and his Pharisaic Judaism had upon the culture of his day. Jesus is purposely trying to pull Nicodemus out of this rut. And I dare say Jesus is now hard at work trying to pull many Christians who feel that way also out of the same rut. And maybe some of our perfectionist Episcopalian friends too. Let me take a step back and let's think of this in a different way. I'll tell you a little bit of a story. Every time I've gone to the Holy Land, I've traveled with a guide by the name of Iyad Kumri. Iyad is Palestinian, he's Arab, and he's a Christian. He's Palestinian, he's Arab, and he's a Christian. And his family members have been members of the Episcopal Church for well over 150 years. And before that, they were Greek Orthodox. He and his family have lived their entire lives practicing the faith of the church as it was handed down to them by the original descendants in the original location where Christianity was born. Okay, so typically, Iyad caters mostly to American Episcopalians, and he takes mostly Episcopalians around the Holy Land. And according to him, they like three things. Some of you might know this. Ice cream, pets, and coffee. Anyway, I digress. On one occasion, Iyad had a gap in his schedule. He had a cancellation or something, and so there were no Episcopalians to guide for that week. So he took the opportunity that he was going to guide another group. And this group, though, ascribed to a more kind of biblically fundamental form of Christianity. So Iyad introduces himself and explains his family's story to everybody. And so one of the pilgrims then is very curious, and he poses a question to him and says something like, "When did you become a Christian?" And Iyad asks, "Excuse me?" And the person repeated the question, "When did you become a Christian?" And he replied, "Well, that question doesn't make any sense. I am a Christian. My family are Christians. We've always been Christians. We live as Christians in a land that's predominantly people of other faiths. But we live as Christians faithfully to love and serve the world as best as we can, even when the government or the establishment doesn't look very favorably upon us. But we do this because Jesus has called us into a life of being faithful, of being loving, and a presence of healing in this part of the world that's always needed a little bit more of God's healing and love than many other places. I live my life as a Christian because I am a Christian." My friends, this is the kind of call and the kind of life that Jesus is inviting Nicodemus into. And Jesus is calling us into that life as well. Every time we engage our life of faith together, we're called to be salt of the earth and light to the world, and to be the people who step out of the dark places and into the light, to be the Christians that the world needs now. And we're called to do this out of love, in the same way that God showed us love first by sending us Jesus to teach us a better way. To teach us that being a Christian serves no one when it's secret, but also serves no one well when it's rules-based and focused on scrupulosity. It's about answering the call of love, the call of God, the call that God has on your heart, a call that wants to bless you and make you a blessing for others, and to go forth from this place and then to bless the families and family systems of the world around us. And this is no small task. It started well over 4,000 years ago with Abraham. And it's Jesus' invitation today in the gospel to Nicodemus. And in the year 2020, it's our invitation too. We might not always know where we're going. We might not see the end point. But we have been baptized into this faith for a reason. We are gathered here as one people to be Christ's heart and hands in this world right now. We might be questioned by others about our identity or about our background or about our credibility. Who put you in charge? Why are you loving me? Why is this happening? But let's be honest, we know that we belong to Jesus because he tells us and all of his followers over and over and over again that we are beloved children of God and that absolutely nothing can ever sever or take away that love from us. Nothing. Even when we think we're undeserving or if we've been told by others that we're unworthy, we belong to Jesus. We're worthy of God's love. And we're being invited today into this call, into this call to soar beyond our wildest dreams into realms unknown for the sole purpose of blessing others. What an invitation. Jesus calls to bless you and get you out of a rut. Jesus calls you into a life of blessing others. Jesus calls all of us, like Nicodemus, to step into the light. Jesus calls. How do you answer?